Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is the Sarah and Vinny Secret Show on RadioAlice.com. Just a heads up, it's not for work, it's not for kids, but it is a good time. Available right here on RadioAlice.com.
You only hear it on the Secret Show. You won't find it on your radio. Oh, maybe you're not hip enough to know that Sarah and Vinny's got a secret show.
And we are rolling.
Sarah and Vinny's Secret Show for March 30th. It's a Thursday. 2017, Sarah, Vinny, and Bryn in here, and Yuzette producing from the other room, waiting on a phone call from Paul Mercurio. He's coming back to the station, and hopefully soon, too, because we don't have all day here. Before he gets here, I wanted to give you a letter from Don Draper. He's an intern.
Our old intern.
Mm-hmm. I miss interns so much. I want interns back. I just love the interns.
Me too.
It was just always so cool to see what kids were up to.
Give us material.
Yeah, sure. Remember that one kid? What did we used to call him?
David.
Yeah, but
one who shall not be named.
Button Snooki.
When was our last vacation? Christmas?
Yeah. No, February.
Oh, February. He had texted me saying, hey, I'm in town. Can I come in? Every time he does that, we're on vacation.
Well, yeah, because the vacations coincide because he's a schoolboy.
Well, did he graduate? I'm not sure if he graduated yet.
I doubt it.
He's on his eighth year.
Seemed like a kid that was going to be in school for a while.
Did you see that art project he showed us with the balls and the penis?
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
He's
having fun.
All
but
the fruit.
I don't think he's pressing the gas to get through school quickly.
Yeah. Mm. Having too much fun, guys.
The greatest.
But, and Snooki.
And frankly, you know, the way people aren't finding jobs out of school, why would you rush?
Yeah.
Right. So Don Draper, about 3 years ago, he was an intern of ours,
mm-hmm.
and he always dressed up, and that was why we started calling him Don Draper.
He'd wear
a suit all the time. He says, I cannot believe it's already been 3 years since I was your intern. I miss you all dearly, especially Who Daddy. Who Daddy's on, he's on in the promised land. Whose was that?
They're on the second floor. Let me go get them.
Okay, great. The last time I wrote in for bad advice, it was about a girl who wanted an open relationship, but also said that living in the East Bay was a long distance. I was slightly heartbroken, but also felt like a total dipshit after hearing all of you point out the obvious. She just wasn't into me anymore. This time's a little different. I am head over heels for a girl who feels the same way about me. Her name is Emma. Pictures on Facebook, and she's from London. Accent is so unbelievably sexy. Holy shit, but lives in Boston. We met 2 years ago at my friend's wedding, and I slept with her cousin that night. Oddly, though, it was Emma and I who kind of kept in touch. Then one day last year, in September, I got a message from her on Facebook saying she'd be in San Francisco. It'd be great to meet up. No brainer. We met up, played hide the hot dog. Don't bleep that shit. And to be honest, we have not stopped talking since. In fact, we're now dating. Yes, me in SF and her in Boston. We've taken turns flying back and forth. But when I flew to Boston in February, that's when I realized she's the girl of my dreams. I'm not a believer in fate. I believe we create our own path. But some things are out of our control. Emma and Sean feels like fate. Sean is his name, not Don Draper. So what's next? Well, I got a random promotion, and it's going to require a move to Boston. If that's not fate, I don't know what is, because I accepted and will officially move the last weekend of April. So I'm not writing for bad advice. I'm writing to give you an update on my life. but more to say thank you. This crew has influenced me in more ways than I can express, from learning how to have an intense yet caring boss like Yuzette, to learning to get laid from an Instagram picture. We're still very good friends. There is one thing I'm certain of, and that is my internship with Alice laid the bricks, not for the job I had, but the job I wanted. P.S. Sarah, I'm going to need your Beantown Yayo Connect if they're still alive. Yayo.
Yayo, you mean his Coke? Your Coke Connect?
Is that what Yayo is?
Yayo is Coke.
Yay.
Oh, I don't have or a Connect.
Man, you had us all feeling great about you until you said that.
Yeah, don't be a Cokehead. Right, Paul?
He must be kidding. Let's just assume he's kidding.
Ayo. It has its benefits.
I'm happy for that guy. Good for him.
Yeah.
That's a song for that. It goes, Ayo for Yayo. All up in Yayo. My nasal.
Oh.
You never heard anyone refer to it as Yayo?
No.
Huh.
Now I have, though. Paul Mercurio has just joined us. Woo! He's at the Punchline tonight, Hello. Tomorrow, and Saturday.
Yeah. Do you have drug days? You done LSD?
No, I've done tabs of acid, and I've
That's
done...
That's LSD. LSD.
No, but I mean, there's a... Oh, I did THC when I was 17.
That's
pot. I know, but it completely freaked me out. I was 17 with my parents.
What's the difference between that and pot?
It's the concentrated
oil?
Yeah, it's like
hash.
Yeah, it's but you take it as a tablet and it's very, very concentrated. It's like the thing that makes pot be pot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's like, so it's like pot on steroids, right? It's just a little pill. And
This must be a New York
pot.
Thing. I've never heard of that.
No, I mean when I was living
hash
in Rhode Island.
Is really
oh, Rhode Island.
Potent.
Rhode Island.
It's THC. But I've never heard of it in a pill form.
No, me either.
So it sounds more modern. Like now they have pills and food.
Well, my brother was getting married to this woman. My brother's older than I am. And her brother it was
they
like
still
a big
together?
Party. Yeah, they're like 30
All
years.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. and so it was like this big family thing. Like the two families are going to meet each other. It was at night. And so I went and hung out with my sister-in-law's brother, this guy who he's a big partier, and I partied and smoked and whatever. So we go into the woods with a bunch of guys
as
and women.
As you do.
And we start.
Because you guys are teenagers?
Yeah, we're 17. Yeah. And we have kingers of beer, like six big 16-ounce whatever. And we're drinking beer. And then they said, here, have a hit of THC. And I was like, I knew of it, but I'd never done it. And I said, okay. So I did it, right? And then it kicked in. And everything started to spin. I got really hot. It was like February. It was like 25 degrees out. I took my shirt off. So now I'm like shirtless in the woods, really hot, and I'm freaking out. And they're all laughing, and they think it's really funny. And I'm just like, so I'm sort of, making my way through it. And then I had to drive my mother home because I drove her.
What?
So you guys went in the woods like behind the family home.
Yeah, there's
to
like
party.
Some woods behind the thing.
So no one questioned why you were going out at night in February.
No, I think they thought we were going to somebody's
house.
Well,
they probably knew.
Right?
So now you got to drive your mom home.
Yeah. So
she doesn't drive?
She drives, but I was driving. I don't know why, but I drove that night.
God.
And so I get in the car. And everything's spinning, and I'm almost going to throw it, like, really bad. And I'm really hot, and I'm really disoriented. So I was driving.
You drove?
I drove, because I didn't want to say I couldn't drive, because I was worried that she was going to say, well, why can't you drive? And then I was going to get caught in this thing, so I thought it was better, which was stupid. I could have gotten hurt, right?
Everybody or killed your mom.
Right, exactly.
I could have gotten hurt.
And,
not I could have run someone. Yeah. Me.
I could have. Oh, my mother's never gonna die. She's Robo Mom. She's 89. She's not
made
dying.
Of robot. Mostly.
She's like, oh my gosh, this is like nothing. There's nothing wrong with her. She's 89. You know, you give her stuff and she fights back. arsenic. I can't.
What have you given her?
Arsenic. I've never seen people be able to ingest that and not have it affect them. We did have a bet. Like she went to the doctor after 30 years, and we had a bet that there was something wrong with her, and there was nothing wrong with her. Like
she didn't go to the doctor for 30 years. You're like, you got to go to the doctor.
Yeah, because she was looking kind of pale, and there's a lot of history of cancer on her side of the family. She has low blood pressure. Her cholesterol's fine.
Well, you're a pale people, the Mercurios.
Exactly.
Who's the bet between?
My brother and my sister and I.
Oh, that's messed
up. Yeah, yeah.
You guys, you said, Mom, you're going to the hospital. You guys, let's make bets as to whether there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
You were all betting against her, or you were all betting amongst yourselves?
Oh, no, we were betting against her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were like, I was thinking cancer. I figured she had to have something.
Right.
Because she,
that's
like...
That's so nice of you.
No, I'm not wishing it on her.
Well, they're a funny family.
Yeah.
I guess that's...
So if you won the bet, would you have been, like, celebrating?
Yeah, I mean, there you are. You won.
Like, you've got cancer, but I got 20 bucks!
I bet against you, Ma.
Oh, you're not going to get chemo. You're going to ruin the whole thing. Come on. No, she,
Oh my God. Hilarious jokes about cancer.
Let me cash the check first.
No, but you know, I mean, she's, she won't, she has, I think I mentioned she has that hearing aid and it whistles all the time or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, so back to your, now
so
you're
now
in...
we're in the car. All right. And I'm on the highway.
You're on the highway and everything's just spinning.
I'm serious. So this
driving
is,
in
this
a blender.
So I'm right, exactly. And I'm driving, and I'm literally going like 35 miles an hour on the highway. Mm-hmm. And my mother's like, why are you driving so slow? I was so freaked out that I was going to get in an accident that I'm like the only kid in history who was being yelled at for driving too slow. And it took us like twice as long to get home. And I got to the thing. I got in and I went into the house and then I got really sick. But they didn't know I got sick. But that wasn't the worst thing. The worst thing I did that year was we had SAT tests. And the night before, Paul Biello... had a big keg party at his house.
It's just some random friend of yours?
Yeah, one of the high school buddies. And so all the seniors go over and we start pounding beers. And someone told me I had over 20 of those red solo cups of beer. So now I'm completely plastered and I got to go to the bathroom. So I go into the bathroom, I close the door, I unbutton my pants, I take my pants part of the way down, I'm going to pee standing up, and I'm like, I can't do this, I'm going to pass out. So
did you see that?
So I sit.
He throws his hand out like his... 5 feet long. I'm gonna pee.
So,
what
right,
the?
No, so what
we've seen it. So
then, I needed 10 or 15 minutes to get it out of the thing.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't even see you. Back
wrestle
there.
That monster out.
Right, and it did. Like it kind of went back on me a couple of times, and I go to sit down. This has happened twice to me in my life. The other time it happened was right after I passed the bar exam.
So your pants are still up and you're going to sit down and just...
Well, my pants are like down to here.
Yeah.
And my junk is out.
Yeah.
I could show you exactly
no.
if you want. I don't manscape.
So it's not covering your ass.
Do you manscape? You're very clean.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
They're all
trimmers. Yeah. I think you should just let it be.
Well, let it be.
It's like a jungle down there. So I'm out, and I go to sit down on the
I'm thinking, no wonder your wife doesn't want anything to do with you. You're disgusting.
It's like little
chip. And your dog.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to sit down.
And I sit down on the edge of the toilet seat, and then I put my head on the sink, and I pass out on the floor with my pants down and my junk and my dick and my balls out.
So
and the door's
and have
locked.
You peed?
I don't think I did. I think I was just like, oh man, I'm gonna fall over. So I think the plan was I was gonna sit and pee, which I do now, and I think is the best thing ever. I almost always sit when I pee. I don't stand.
Me too.
Right?
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now you say that to people and they think it's weird. See, look at
all
this.
Of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at home I do. Not
yeah.
Here,
I
not
don't. I don't go to a restaurant and sit and pee. But yeah, at home I sit and pee.
Sometimes
you
I go
sit
to
down and pee.
I'll go to a restaurant not eat. I'll just go in and sit and pee and leave. No, yeah, it's more comfortable.
Well, sure.
Because sometimes
you go into the stall.
If you have to pee a long time, standing up, that's like a 2 minute stand up. Why would you get rest? Take time off your life.
A giant bladder. Or a prostate thing.
Well,
I think I do. Every three hours now, I'm getting up to pee. How about you?
Is that right?
In the middle of the night, it's killing me. It's killing me. Like
Do you take saw palmetto?
No. What is what?
You should take that.
Saw? What is it?
Saw palmetto.
Yeah. It's
okay,
like
I'm not
you get
mentally
it at-
challenged. I just don't know what it is. Is this what we do?
Look it up. What do you want from me? I'm not your doctor.
You can get it at really any place where they sell. Like a Whole Foods
it
would
shrinks,
have it. Or
it shrinks your prostate and helps you pee flow.
Is it? Is it?
And
powder?
So it will help. No, it's a pill, and it'll help your pee.
But
it'll
are
help you?
You
fall.
Are you having
you drain
a problem?
Like that.
Are you having a problem?
I'm listening.
peeing, or it, like, it's taking a long time to get there, or you're just peeing frequently?
Frequently.
But it's no problem. You're not standing there waiting for it to get
past
the
prostate.
Come on,
look at me. Come on. This thing's working. Hey, let's just get this straight. Everything's working down there. You know what I'm saying? Working extremely well.
What now?
Here's the part of the problem is I think
I'm not challenged. You don't have to spell it out for me. I had it the first time.
Saw palmetto.
Well, I'm trying to make sure you understand what I'm telling you. It's like an herb or something, and you wouldn't think it would work.
Okay, don't yell at me about my prostate. Now I'm getting stressed.
You're the one saying you get up every 3 hours.
I sound defensive.
This is like we're brothers yelling at each other. All right, so I get up. Because I think part of it is because I'm a comic and I'm drinking at night, like not usually booze, but like water. You know what I mean? You're just drinking a lot. Like more, like if you work as an accountant, you go home at 7, 8 o'clock, you have a glass of wine. By 8 or 9 o'clock, you're not drinking a lot of liquids. I think that's part of it. So I try to pull back on that, but and then I get up and then I can't fall back to sleep because my mind starts going. I start thinking about things. I got to do this. Or...
You sleep worse as you get older too.
Yeah,
I sleep way worse now than I did when I was younger.
Why? Do you have things on your mind, or is it
I don't know. Maybe I don't need as much sleep, so I'll just wake up in the middle. Like, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm always like, oh, what a bummer. Yeah. Let me just fall back to sleep, because I've got 3 hours left.
And I can't look at the clock once I wake. When I wake up like that, if I look at the clock, that makes it worse, because then I know, like...
You start counting
sometimes
how long.
I talk myself into thinking, oh, you just slept 4 hours, but I know I didn't just sleep 4 hours.
What are your hours on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert?
It's kind of flexible because that's why I took we set it up this way so that I could come and go as long as I tell them. But generally you go in the morning.
What
time?
Early
mid-morning, like, you know, 9-ish, 10-ish, and that goes through the day, and the taping is at 5:30, so you know, my 6:30.
Do you already know how much you have to contribute for that day, or is it
kind of a random rough thing? And then there'll be some days where I don't have to do any of that and I just do the warm-up. So it just depends.
Do you do the warm up on the regular?
I do the warm up pretty much every day that I'm there. I do the warm up. Yeah.
So you go out and do 5 minutes before the show starts.
It's like usually anywhere from 15 to 25 minutes.
Wow,
because,
really?
Depending on how ready they are back there.
Yeah, exactly. Because we do a rehearsal and then a rewrite after the rehearsal. This was a system that we did at the Daily Show, and then took to the Colbert Report. Now this, so like,
is the audience there for the?
No, what happens is,
so the rehearsal is
the rehearsal's nobody. It's nobody's in the studio except the staff, and they do.
What time is this generally?
This is at 4 o'clock.
Okay,
3-ish, 3:30, 4.
You feel like we've got a show together? Let's run this hour.
Well, you have to, especially because this show is so tied to footage and sound bites. You have to run the mechanics of it, right? Like traditional monologues, like, you know, Jimmy Fallon's and Letterman and Johnny Carson.
Hate those guys?
No, I know.
When people bring them up, though, you're like, "F those guys."
Well,
right?
It's funny because, you know, we were behind, and everybody was like, "It's so funny how, like, once you become number one, like, everybody's like, oh, I always loved your show." And like, it's the same person that, like, 6 months earlier. Here's one thing I got when Colbert started with the show, and then I'll go back to the thing. I hate his dancing.
Like, oh, God, I loved the dancing.
Okay, thank you. He would come out.
He'd come out and do his high kicks, and he'd be dancing with John.
And I finally snapped on somebody. I go, let me explain this to you. Someone comes up to you and says, on a platter, not that he deserved it, I'm going to give you a major franchise that only turns over once every 25 years on a major network. Would you not go out and dance a little bit, you idiot? Like, how do you... the guy's excited. He's the host of The Late Show on CBS that happened 25 years ago. And it, you know what I mean? Like,
well, so, the pressure alone, just as you present it there, is enough to make someone say, I don't know if I want... I don't want that job. No,
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah.
Like, that is...
Oh, yeah.
Well, you definitely. Got big, giant ones to even take the job. And really, I think ultimately you have to just say... it.
Yeah.
And exactly. Go do whatever.
Well,
and dance. Or do whatever. Yeah.
And I think that's also why he's kind of found his footing, too.
Well, and that's, I think, what you're getting at with the monologue thing. He doesn't do the traditional monologue where he just comes out and does it. There's a side. Radio.com. Radio.com. Piece a lot of times.
Yeah.
Where, and so it, it's super reminiscent of his actual show that he used to do on Comedy Central, The Colbert Report, except that he's obviously not playing a conservative.
Right.
So they're popping up. So I can see where you'd need to run that.
Right. And that came out.
There's all kinds of graphics and photos and video.
So on The Daily Show, before John got there, we would always try to look like a news show. So we would get footage, but we didn't have a budget. So we would, there was tape, we would tape different news networks and we'd steal it. And then they'd yell at us and they'd call Comedy Central and threaten to sue them and to tell you to stop. So we'd go to NBC and steal something from them. Then we go to CNN. And then eventually we said, we need a budget. So there's a thing called an AP news feed. I don't know if you guys get it, but it's
sure.
So you get all these footage and sound bites, a bank of all this stuff, right? So the rule was always, pretty much every story had to have a sound bite or some footage or something, right? For the most part. And so that became a process. So the thing with The Daily Show was we had to create the process while we were doing the show because late night comedy show existed like this. Traditionally, the monologue is either written on a cue card or in a teleprompter, and you read it. And if you're doing a rehearsal and you don't like the joke, you cut the joke, you tear up the cue card. There's no, it's very quick
right.
rehearsal, right? This is all tied to footage. So if you're doing a story about Trump and it's got four different subtopics in it, and there's a picture of Trump, and there's a picture of Obama, and then there's a picture of the Capitol, and then you cut one of the jokes in the middle, there's an editor in a bay that's getting radioed information that says, cut the thing showing Trump getting out of the car. He has to recut that chunk of footage so that it matches. So that's what has. So that's the process that we developed.
God, that sounds complicated
too. It's a lot of moving parts and it needs a lot of people to manage it because you have to have a liaison between what's happening on the floor and the person in the and there's a producer in the edit bay that looks like the studio with an editor. Then there's a liaison between those people and the people on the floor. And so what would happen was over time, that's the process we developed. Steven came into The Daily Show. He was a correspondent. He got that show. He took that process to the Colbert Report, and it's now the process at The Late Show.
Right.
It's a direct descendant of what we did at The Daily Show for years.
And it works. It's fantastic.
But it's a lot. It's so funny because the unions are a big part of this, right? So the Late Show Theater, the Ed Sullivan Theater, is a big union shop. And all those guys that work like on the crew, you know, behind the scenes, they're like real like blue collar kind of guys, you know, they're traditional union guys and they've been there forever, right? So our process is we tape around, we rehearse around, the show gets written over the course of the day, stuff gets produced, footage, and then people come from the staff because they want to hear they want people to laugh a little bit so they get a sense of what works, and they basically runs at least those first two acts. And then they figure, okay, that's not quite working. Somebody's making notes. And then there's a rewrite room that they go into. And
that's between the rehearsal?
So now the rehearsal's done.
Well, they're bringing the audience in.
Bringing the audience in.
And warming them up.
They buff the floor. The band does a rehearsal.
Oh.
Yeah, the in-house band, who's phenomenal, does a rehearsal after Steven's rehearsal. And then buffs the floor real quick. Not Steven. And then they bring the audience in. While the audience is being brought in, all that's happening, they're rewriting the show. They're rewriting it, recutting it, dropping
funny.
Stuff, adding stuff.
Or that's got to be like just a freaking whirlwind for those
hours. Like? It's the same thing when I was writing full-time on The Daily Show in the morning. It was like taking a final exam every day for 3 hours.
And
it was
cramming the whole day.
And you're just like...
And then taking
and
it.
And you're just like, oh God, please come up with something. Please look at an article. Oh God. But that's why there's a staff. So like on any given day, there's
one guy can have writer's block.
Yeah, you know what? Seriously, like somebody comes up dry, there's 11 other people. You know what I mean? Like, so what ends up happening? So that process of them rewriting it's like an accordion. So I don't know when I go out how long I'm going to be out there.
Right.
So my thing is just one big improv. Like you can't really do stand up in that situation. So I just.
But you must have go to stuff because it's a new audience every night. It's not like you know, the band's not going to go, heard that one last night.
No, I don't. It's literally, I'll start just talking to you about your jacket or whatever.
Tell the story about what happened to you at the soup place.
No, I can't. It doesn't work. None of that works in there. It doesn't work. You have to, I just talk. The only thing there's a certain thing I tell them, like what they have to do. Like you got to turn your phones off. You have to be big in the space. There's like that technical stuff. Then it's just a free-for-all.
You got to be big in the space?
Yeah, because what happens is people think they're watching TV at home. So when I watch TV at home, a lot of people...
Yeah, we don't laugh out loud.
You don't laugh out loud, right. And you're really in comfortable chairs, and there's screens, too, in the theater, so you sit back and you start watching and supposed to be laughing, and it is a massive, massive space, and it eats up all of the sound.
Oh.
And the reason there's a live studio audience is to kick people in the ass at home and like say this is
right.
So if they even
it's energy,
if,
it's energy even if the
they
la-
yeah, even if they laugh and they do it in a normal tone of voice, it sounds like background because they're mic'd half the level of Steven and the guests.
Right.
And it's massive. It's like a warehouse, so you have to like really like.
So you coach them on laughing.
Yes.
Nice.
On volume. Not on to do it. It's up to them if they want to laugh. But I just give them permission to completely let their hair down. That's right. Part of what I have to do.
I want you to go.
I kind of like not like you're being stabbed, but like something. God. Okay. Let's not do the rape laugh, everybody. That brings everybody down.
Okay, hilarious rape jokes always
work.
It's
not a rape joke. It was a rape reference. You should still be able to say that. All right, so anyway. And so like so that happens. So then like, sometimes I'm out there, but I've told them, I said 15 minutes is optimal. Like at some point, because you're getting them so pumped up.
Right.
And then it's like, and then it's, you know, right. It's like, you know, okay, hot and heavy, you're ready to.
And then you bring, do you like sort of say, now we're starting the show, and then it just starts with when you exit the
stage? No, we bring the band out, the band plays.
Oh.
Then the band.
Oh, that's good, the
then
band.
Then Steven comes out and does a Q&A before the show.
Oh,
yeah.
Does he?
Yep.
Before the show?
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, and then that goes back to what John and, goes back to what, and a lot of shows do it, but we did it back with Kilbourn and then John. And again, Steven just took that from that to the Colbert Report and now this.
He just
and
goes out and says, like, hi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks
anybody got any questions?
Anybody got any questions?
Where's the magic?
That's just so strange.
Yeah, like, that's, you're supposed to go, like, and now, Stephen Colbert. And now there's some leg kicks. So you're telling me the guy comes out, chats with everyone,
yeah.
Has tea, and then goes backstage, gets his announcement, and comes out kicking?
Yes.
You know what?
Why? That's nice. It's a nice gesture that he's talking to people.
I think that sometimes there's actually, and it's funny to hear that because sometimes the crowd goes so wild when he comes out. There was sort of a chant that they did it, and it looks like they've discouraged that now.
Well, you know, it's funny.
They would chant Steve at the beginning of his Comedy Central show, and that would go on to the point where he would be like seriously, you guys, I'm got to do a show here. Like, you've got to stop.
You're chewing up my minutes.
And so they were doing that at the beginning when the late show came on. That was happening and going on forever. And I've noticed that occasionally it'll break out a little bit, but for the most part, it sounds like they're telling people, don't do that.
You're very astute. You're very on top of things.
I love that guy.
You should really go into radio.
Okay.
Yeah, what happened was that Steven chant was organic and made sense for the character. Because that character on Colbert Report was this blustery guy who the world should love. So they were essentially part of the bit, the audience, every night. So that Steven thing was something that we came up with and encouraged them to do because that fed that. So what happened was we go to CBS and they're all conditioned to it. Without any prompting, they would break out into it. I wouldn't prompt them. They just, because they had been seeing that for 10 years, they had been part of it.
If you're a fan of him, you know you chant Steven at the beginning of the show.
And, you know, half of them are diehard fans. The other half maybe tourists, whatever. Just whatever. So for a while, they wanted it. Then they didn't want them to do it. Because
CBS didn't want them to.
No, Steven. Because I think what they were trying to do was separate themselves from the Colbert Report. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a different show. Where this is a more of a variety show. We don't want to be that character. We don't want them to think that Steven's going to still sort of be doing that character. So we don't want that. But then as the show went on and we started to do more politics and more of it with this whole primary going back to 2016, it started to just find its place again. So they don't care now if they do it because...
Right.
They've just owned it. It's like, you know, we can't not be what we are, especially now with all this stuff. And so, like, it all kind of, in a weird way, ties together. Like, it all relates.
It's not weird. It's him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
and
I mean,
he needs to just be that.
Well, but he didn't. It's a great point. But I, you know, 10 years of that character, it's a different. It's like going from playing a AAA baseball stadium to Yankee Stadium. It's like you have to understand. Like, we were in decent sized studios with 150 people. This is like literally walking into
how many people?
500.
Jesus, that is a big.
And it's just the space. It's like this. I know I've talked about the dome a bunch and the thing, and there's like two tiers. So basically, once that started, then you could track. You could literally track like 5%, 10% of the monologue was politics. Then it became 20, then 30, then the whole thing, and then the second act sitting down used to be more like non-politics bit stuff, and then that became a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit, because, you know, and then people were starting to get mad at the media, at the late night shows, for going after Trump. Like I went on CNN with Bill Carter, the New York Times TV media guy, and they asked us, like, do you guys think you're going too hard on Trump? And it's like, no, it's not like you go in a room and go, okay, today we're going to do 6 jokes on Trump and 3 jokes on Hillary. You just see what the meat is on the table, and that's what you go for and get the best stuff. And if Trump doesn't like being made fun of, tell him to stop putting meat on the table and stop acting like a douchebag right. so much. We'd be more than happy to rip Hillary and Bernie Sanders a new So, like, you know, this idea, the thing with The Daily Show was, and kind of starting to be with the Colbert Report, there's this perception that because we're talking politics, we have to be fair. We're a comedy show. We don't have to be fair. You douchebag.
Well, it's a good thing you don't have to be fair, because it aligns with my politics, but I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, I can't watch that show because I do love Donald Trump.
I understand people might be listening who are like, whatever, Trump people, but like, and that's fine. I'm not making fun of them, whatever. That you're happy. But like, if your guy's acting like an idiot, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, they're going to get it.
Right.
Right between the eyes. So, and they should. So that's the thing that surprised me, that CBS doesn't say, hey man, back off on that, you know, pro-liberal stuff, because they're just letting it happen. And they say that, because we're dealing pretty straight up with that stuff, and like Fallon tends to be a different show. He's just a little bit more, you know, it's not
the
worse and not better.
Day.
So that became like, and then it started to, I didn't think the show would take over because Fallon's so likable and he's been around for 5 years, and the stuff that he does, like, everybody
he's
likes.
He's very charming. You know what's really funny about it is I because we do this show, and I watch it all a day late because obviously I'm not up at midnight. I watch all those shows, all of them. And I'm particular to Stephen. I've always been a huge fan of his. He did have some rough days in the beginning. Mm. But I have really been so, I mean, I think I came in, I'm like, show was great last night. Like it was, yeah. I was so relieved. Like, oh God, he's really hitting his stride. But they're all, Fallon is great. Kimmel is great.
They all have their own personality.
I love Seth Meyers' show.
And I think all of those shows, when they start, think about it. You have to make the donuts and make the machine that makes the donuts at the same time. It wasn't like 80 people. The show went from 80 people at the Colbert Report to over 200 people.
Staff-wise.
We went from 83 hours of programming a year, because it was 4 days a week, a half hour, to 202 hours of programming. Like that. You can't go somewhere and practice that for a year. Like, we did a few test shows. So all these moving parts have to come together.
Well, they are starting to really run together.
Oh, the thing about the guy and the union guy, this one guy, Harold.
Oh, yeah. So back to this guy.
He's been there 25 years, because it all ties in. And he goes up to me and the stage manager one day, and he goes, and I'm not exaggerating to be funny. He talks like this. He goes, hey, what are they doing in that rewrite room anyway? We go, what? He goes, well, what are they doing in the rewrite room? We go, well, they're rewriting the show. Why do they got to rewrite the show? We go, because, you know, we want to make the show as good as we can. And he goes, well, you gotta, boy, I'll tell you, you guys really ought to get your shit together. He goes, they got a clock down there? I go, why? He goes, well, maybe somebody should look at the clock so we can get out of here right at 6:30 like we did with Letterman. And he walked away. And he would yell at Stephen. Like, one time Stephen came up, and we're about to start the show. Because they were all, it was like a rocket. Letterman was notorious for 5:30 start, 6:30 out. These guys, you know, and in the beginning, in fairness to them, it was kind of crazy. We were doing like 2-hour tapings because we were overshooting stuff because we weren't sure. You know, you just have to figure it out, though. And Steven came up one time, and he was literally, the show's about to start, right? And he's like, oh, shit, the band's playing. And he forgot a prop downstairs in the rewrite room. And as he's walking to go back, this guy, Harold, goes, oh, where the fuck you going? And he's yelling at Steven.
Did Steven just go?
He just didn't know. He went up to Steven one day and he goes, hey, you know, you really got to figure this out and get this on time, like in Steven's face. And Steven looked around like, what? I don't, like, it was so crazy that Steven didn't know how to, you know, it's something so crazy. You don't know how to process it.
Or how to respond exactly. Like, do I slap you?
And he's a huge guy. And his father was in this union, in this space before. And he built himself a little room with Wi-Fi. And he goes into his room. He's the head carpenter. And he just, his job is to push a button and this gate goes up. You know that big gate that goes up and down?
The garage door thing?
The garage door. He's the guy that pushes the garage door button.
Oh, that's his job.
And he orders a couple of people around. They found another guy. They fired him. He had a little sleep hovel somewhere in this theater and he would sleep and they couldn't find him and he was sleeping and taking naps in the theater and they had to fire the guy. Like these unions are very good.
There's good and bad with everything.
Guys, so this guy was like, I think it was like, I think he still thought it was like his show in his house.
Right.
So anyway.
We're
crazy.
We love you.
I love you guys. I could spend forever with you. I want to move in with you.
No. Maybe this whole show was just for me, but I totally love hearing the ins and outs of the, you know, the process.
Yeah, I hope your listeners don't get bored. I think
it's fascinating.
And it's a podcast. They don't have to listen.
I glanced at the lines. We have people on hold that just want to listen without it being edited. And I kept looking. I'm like, no, they're still there.
Let's see.
They're still in.
Check in with them. Hold on. Let's see. Pick a line 1 to 5. Let's
see. 2.
Hello, line 2.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
What's your name?
Jose.
Hi, Jose. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Are you enjoying the show?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Colbert?
You know what? Yeah, I was when he was on the Comedy Central, but I haven't been keeping up with
him. Well, did you hear all the in-depth stuff? You start taping that every day.
I did, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jose.
Good. Are you at work right now or what?
Yes.
I see.
Is that why you're talking really softly?
Have you taken a woman in a van? Are you taking some? You sound like you're doing something illegal.
Don't be mean. He's a diehard. All right, hold on. I'm not
being mean. I'm joking around.
Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing really good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. What's your name?
Nelson.
Nelson. Is Paul Mercurio a yay or a nay?
He's a total yay.
Yay!
Oh, thank you, Nelson. Appreciate it.
All right.
You want to come to the punchline? I'll give you a ticket. Get you a couple of tickets. You want to come?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. Well, what about Jose? Jose doesn't get to come.
Okay, Jose, you got to promise me you're going to watch.
I got 5 people on a line right here. I want 5 pairs of tickets for one of your shows.
Oh, snap! What'd you do, Paul?
5 pairs. I'll get their names right now. Can I have 5 pairs of tickets?
Okay.
All right. Everybody on hold right now. I'm his person who's taking him around.
Okay.
What's her name? I forget your name.
Andrea.
Andrea. Andrea has a pair of tickets for everybody who's on hold right now. So just stay on the line, Nelson. You're going to the show. Okay?
Oh my God.
Well, he's giving the one guy, but he doesn't give him to what the fuck, Paul?
I literally feel like I'm home getting yelled at by my wife.
All right. Thank you. You're great. The punchline tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday.
Yeah, come on out. Everybody meet Nelson and Jose. They'll be there.
And the other people who are holding online. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. The end. Hold on the line, you guys. We'll get your names in a second.